We often talk about employment and the different technologies and different ways that blind and partially sighted people can do a variety of jobs that you may not necessarily think are very accessible. So what about being an architect? Is that something which is accessible if you're blind or partially sighted? Well, it is really, and there's different technologies and different ways around things, and I'm joined to talk a little bit more by Chris Downey, who is in California.
Thank you, Alan. It's wonderful to be with you.
Tell me, Chris, a little bit about your job then as an architect. I know there's different kinds of architects, so what's your speciality?
Dealing primarily with projects that are specifically for the blind and visually impaired. On one hand is a small little niche of projects, but then that incorporates everything from rehabilitation centers for the blind and visually impaired, schools for the blind, eye centers, whether it's clinical facilities or research facilities. I also get into sort of related projects that include things like transportation, because if public transportation facilities and services. If you're blind, they don't like it when we drive. So that puts a lot of importance on the accessibility of transit facilities, but also things like museums and cultural centers, where it's twofold. One is participating in those cultural centers, but then secondly, it's about accessing the content. So those are sort of the primary types of things that I get involved with, but then there's some outliers, but that's the main thrust of things.
When people think about architecture, buildings and accessibility, they probably think more about the physical things like ramps instead of stairs, wide doors and so on. But sensory impairment sometimes falls down the ladder a little bit there. It's just as important, really, isn't it, to make buildings accessible for people with visual impairments?
Right, it is. And, you know, I have experienced being a sighted architect, and I thought of accessibility primarily as those things we talk about in terms of physical accessibility. And in many ways, that's sort of the easy things to do. And it's easy because it's sort of sighted architects, people that are sighted, can easily see and understand those things. Well, at least they can see it. Whether or not they fully understand it and appreciate it is another issue. But when you get to sensory impairments, the way you deal with it, the logistical reality, the way you function is a less apparent thing when people look at it from the outside. You can see someone walking down the street with a cane. That doesn't begin to tell you what the mental process is like when trying to sort that environment in a non-visual way or in a way that where your visual acuity is such that you can't necessarily rely on it, or you need a more visually accessible environment to effectively see what you need to see. So it's a very different thing. It's much more challenging, but it's very critical and just as realistic and important as the physical impairments.
Say an individual being blind or partially sighted, then are you looking at making the journey around a building easier? So perhaps in terms of how much light is in the building, maybe floor texture, wayfinding, making that thing easier?
Yes, all of that. And I try to work with multisensory systems so that it's not biasing any one sense over another, so that they all can contribute. So there'll be acoustic feedback, there'll be some haptic and tactile feedback. You could also work with smells, all sorts of things that can provide all sorts of useful information on a sensory level, multisensory level, that can help you both understand and get to know where you are and help with your orientation and wayfinding. And then it gets balanced as to whether or not it's a facility that's targeting towards people that visit just once in a while or just once, versus a place where they might live or work or visit on a very regular basis. So there, you know, there are different things. There's memory, there's things you get to learn, but if it's a one-off experience you have there, then it needs to explain itself in a different way.
You mentioned, Chris, that you were a sighted architect. So did you lose your sight while you were still doing the job and have to readapt and relearn things?
Yes, I had 2 degrees in architecture and 20 years of experience before I lost my sight. And it's been about 11 years since I lost my sight.
Has it been strange, you know, when people ask you what you do for a living, you tell them you're an architect, or, you know, when you're maybe looking at jobs and things like that, are people sometimes still a little bit taken aback because they think, or many people will anyway, that architecture is very visual?
Yeah, yes, very much so. Sometimes it's like the conversation stopper where people hear that and they're like, yeah, and all of a sudden I realize I'm talking to myself. The person left. It's like, this guy's feeding me a bunch of bull. But others can get more intrigued. And it's even interesting within sort of the, you know, my peers as architects, those that think of it as like a career-ending proposition, and others that see it as a creative opportunity. And that's really something where I seized on it, was by adopting a new perspective, a new way of looking at things, and a new way of approaching problems. All of a sudden, it creates all sorts of new creative possibilities that can benefit the overall agenda and the overall operation. So yeah, I think the typical thing is to think, oh, okay, that's pretty much a career ender. And the other way is to take it almost as an energizer, as something new and empowering.
It's an interesting way to look at it, Chris, because, you know, you lose your sight, people think, well, that's it, you know, life is over. Yeah. But you've kind of looked at it and went, well, actually, do you know what? I can do even more specialist work now, or give more specialist advice.
Yeah, you know, it's not just for the blind and visually impaired experience. I've now, through various work opportunities and built relationships and getting opportunities where that sense of multi-sensory design is something that those same consultants, those same creative teams that I've worked with before, they're coming to me to get me involved, not just for the accessibility features, but in ways of expanding the way they design to think more multisensorially and to make the projects richer through that. And so they're sort of realizing that, oh, we've sort of neglected these other experiences. If we want an immersive, very compelling, rich environment, we need to be engaging the whole human existence, the whole sensory experience, not just the eyes.
How do you do the job then? How do you carry out your work? You know, what ways have you found, or workarounds have you found that help you do it?
Sort of where I was, as function of where I was in my career when I lost my sight. And that was that I was running and managing an architectural office, and I had lots of people, talented people that were working with me, and I would work through them, you know, sort of respond to the work they're doing, review their drawings, deal with a lot of coordination issues and some creative things. But, you know, I would do a lot of sketching, but not a lot of production in the computer in terms of the various CAD programs and things. And so and sort of rebuilding my toolkit and how I worked as an architect now without sight, it was primarily about restoring that way of working. And largely because, as it turns out, being that I have no sight, there is no CAD program on the market today that is accessible to me. So there's really nothing that I can do to draw directly into the computer. But if I take it like I did before I lost my sight, where I was doing sketches that others would then draw up, then all I needed to do was to develop ways of sketching. First of all, I have a large format embossing printer, so I can print architectural drawings in tactile form. And it's a pretty easy translation. There's really little extra work to be done. So I can take drawings that other, you know, the architectural team is doing. I can take it. I can read the drawings through touch. And then I'm primarily working with wax sticks. I can draw directly on top of the embossed drawing to explore ideas, develop details, all sorts of different things that I can then share with others, discuss it, make adjustments. If I'm working with consultants around the country or internationally, I can just take photographs with my iPhone, send them the photograph of the sketch, and then we can discuss it over the phone, or they can just draw it up, send it back, and I can print it. On certain occasions, it could involve other materials. It could be clay or various things to build a physical model. At times, I'll have the architects that I'm working with do 3D prints or have them build physical models of various details or the building mass or whatever that we're working with. There's all sorts of things that are already there for me to work with to get to know the drawing and participate in the process.
So the physical stuff then, so you've got the 3D printing or embossing and so on. So you're getting all the technical side of things there. I suppose also a lot of it is experience. You know about the materials to use that maybe create different acoustic sensations or haptic you're talking about, different floor coverings, etc., stairwells, that kind of thing. So it all kind of comes together, really, to paint that picture.
The challenge for me is that... I went from full sight to no sight instantly, as opposed to a degenerative eye disease or anything where I would have lost my sight over time. So I really didn't experience low vision conditions. So that I've had to learn and appreciate more academically and empathetically, trying to understand those various things. And then not being able to see the world to then be able to advise and direct the development of these strictly visual things, which are like the color, contrast, lighting levels, to get that to work for low vision conditions. Not being able to see it, just being able to understand it, to understand the science of it, but really needing to work through others to make sure that that's happening appropriately.
Does that almost unique insight then really show the architecture community that despite losing your sight, you and others who want to stay in architecture or get into architecture in the first place really have a valuable part to play?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I think that there just haven't been too many architects that are blind. There's been very limited experience with that and very little opportunity to see what can be gained from that perspective. My experience is that it's tremendous, that there's an awful lot that we can do and contribute towards the profession and towards the built environment that makes it very worthwhile. The bigger challenge is really thinking through how someone growing up blind or visually impaired can go through the training and become an architect themselves and then find their place in the profession, because it's a career that has been built around sight. And through that whole educational experience and interning experience and licensing all along the way, there'll be a lot of challenges in terms of getting those people in positions of control or the professors or whatever else to expand their way of teaching, of sharing and discussing, to take it out of the strictly visual into something that can be learned and experienced in non-visual ways, and for those same professors to sense the validity and value of those things. So I think there's some challenges for people that are coming up as wanting to get into the profession without sight. It's doable, but it's not going to be easy.
It's not totally out of reach then, but the education and, as you say, the professional training can play a bit of catch up and indeed benefit from that extra insight, if you like.
I can only imagine that most professors, most schools of architecture would be really reluctant, really intimidated, not knowing where to go, and it's like struggling to accept the idea. I would, however, want to challenge them with the idea that inherent within that creative process is the value that's placed on different perspectives. But there's also things that you do creatively when trying to solve problems, of adopting new ways of looking at the same problem. I think different sensory impairments, different life experiences can contribute towards that, and then potentially suggest really refreshing new ways of doing things and solving things in a different way. I prefer to sort of challenge those professors that might be reluctant to seize the opportunity for what could be true gains and true benefits to the profession.
You've come across the challenges, Chris. You've found ways to circumnavigate these challenges, if you like. Do you still love the job?
I sure do. In many ways, it's more exciting than ever before. And I feel like, the value I have in the profession is certainly more significant than it was before. And I even like to think that I'm a better architect now than I was sighted.
Chris, it's been great chatting with you, and thank you for telling us your story on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's been a true pleasure.